back to yesterday's London Times. Hey, Jen.
Mares, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you doing? How's your week been?
You know, it's kind of that dog days of summer. We're kind of in the drudgery of things. It's just so hot and late in the summer. But, you know, Pride's going on, and that's enjoyable, right?
More sweaty bodies. You know, yeah. Pride is hot out there, but, yeah.
Yeah, we don't get to celebrate Pride in June in our community. Being a college community, our community empties out in June, so we wait until later in the year, which is great.
Got to welcome people and let them know that they're welcome and that we're an open community, happy functional community.
Yes, all are welcome here, that's for sure. But if you hear some jovial celebrating tonight.
Wait, is that Madonna right now?
Bring on the badge. We're going to support our brothers and sisters who are partying it up just a few blocks away.
Yeah, maybe we'll join them a little later. Heck, who knows?
Sure.
Well, this week, the last couple of days, I've been thinking a little bit about fantasy literature.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's maybe I'm not the biggest fantasy reader, but I do have my series and mm-hmm. I do enjoy it. And I was thinking about how often, let's take something classic like Potter, where you have these Dursleys, you know, that see the world very straightforwardly in black and white.
Mm-hmm. Authoritarian.
Right. And then we kind of open this door to another world of possibilities. And I was thinking about how in life, you know, we can get by in life like a Dursley. We mm-hmm. can just, and even if it's not a fantasy portal, can we realize that there's something more to life out there and something to curious? And can we approach life with that curious attitude?
Yeah.
And maybe be richer for it. And that ties in to our episode today. Just the idea of being curious and wondering behind something that you see.
Oh, well, I am all about this. This sounds, and escaping to a different world, this sounds fabulous.
Why not? Or even a different world within our own,
right,
too. So just scratching a surface and finding something you didn't know would be there.
Well, take me away, Mares. I'm ready.
I'm going to take you to my childhood, actually.
Okay.
Because I started to wonder, London has been a big thing in my life. I'm like, well, yes. How was that when I was a child? All I could think of was, I could remember my mom bouncing me on her lap to a rhyme about changing the guard at Buckingham Palace. I could remember an I Love Lucy episode where she goes to London uh-huh. and she wants to meet the Queen so much, and she keeps practicing curtsying and has a horse, you know, a Charlie horse in uh-huh. her leg uh-huh. when she meets the Queen. And then I remembered a recording that my family had, and it was called something like Children's Songs from Around the World or something like that. Mm-hmm. I remember it had Frère Jacques, and Funiculi Funicula was one that I loved. But it also had a song called Oranges and Lemons.
Okay.
It takes place in London. Now, I know that you know that that's what I was going to do this episode about after it came up on the wheel.
But that's really all I knew.
I was wondering, do you know that song?
Barely. I'm very, very, very barely familiar with it. It's really not in my repertoire. So
cool.
I'm going to get to go on a different kind of journey today for sure.
Fantastic. So. Well, there are it's a folk melody, mm-hmm. Nursery song, really. And
is it one of those that the melody is used on other songs, kind of like how, you know, the alphabet ABC song is
somewhat,
also Twinkle Twinkle kind of thing?
Somewhat. And it might also, historians, you know, have differing ideas about the mm-hmm. melody. Some say, interestingly, that because it's about bells of London, that maybe the original melody might have mimicked different bells and regions and almost acted like a GPS for kids. Like they would know by the sound of that bell.
That's cool.
Isn't that cool?
That
I would
is
like to
so
believe
cool.
that that's true.
I'm believing it's true whether it is or not. I've decided.
That's the way we work around
It's enough.
Here.
Yes. Normally I like to verify, but I'm not going to on that one.
Yeah. There are also variations on the melody, but I'd like to play you one of them, the most popular variation.
I did not listen ahead of time specifically, so I'm glad you're doing this.
Well, some friends of ours made this recording for me. That would be our friend Maggie and her kids Z and E.
Oh, this is so cool.
It's their voices. It goes like this.
Oranges and lemons, said the bells of St. Clemens. You owe me 5 farthings, said the bells of St. Martin's.
When will you pay me, said the bells of Old Bailey.
When I am rich, said the bells of Shoreditch.
When will that be, said the bells of Stepney.
I do not know, said the great bell of Bow.
And here comes the candle to light you to bed.
And here comes the chopper to chop off your head. Chip chop, chip chop, chip chop, the last man's dead.
Just a nice little, wow. You're not getting sleepy now with that little nursery rhyme.
No. I mean, so many children's nursery rhymes and prayers and things are just kind of horrifying for little kids at bedtime.
Little lovely bells of London, and then it just goes south.
Then we're really going to the gallows.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, my childhood recording did not include that last little phrase. It just ended with the great bell of Bow.
Well, and let's face it, I bet it wasn't as cute as that recording.
I know.
Thank you. That was the cutest.
So when I heard it, I thought that those were just nonsense lyrics. Mm-hmm. Something like Hey Diddle Diddle or Humpty Dumpty or Cockney slang, which is fascinating.
Absolutely. That'd be a good episode on its own.
For sure. I do not understand how it works. I've tried to plumb the depths of it, but maybe I have to revisit that. But it turns out that upon closer inspection, it tells a story, and an important story, and it tells us something about London's history and culture. So back to our original talk about you can be a Dursley and take this song at face value as a nursery rhyme, or you can scratch the surface and discover something really interesting.
Ooh, I'm ready for the latter.
Let's do it. Nobody knows exactly how old this song is. There's reference to a song by this title from a 1665 source. We know that it's been written in its entirety in a 1744 book called Tommy Thumb's Pretty Songbook.
Oh, cute.
And there's lots of different verses, up to 15 verses that have been added on.
Wow.
But we're dealing with the original, the OG six verses of this song. And most of the six sites are on the east side of town, some in the city, the mile. But if you GPS it, which of course I did on Google Maps, and if you go in order,
okay,
from site to site, you would walk 7.5 miles. We are totally up to that.
Yeah.
Some of them are right across the street from each other, but because we're doing it in order of the song, we're going to be crisscrossing. So if you're feeling good and ready to hit the road.
It's a decent hike, but I'm ready.
It is. We'll stop at a pub on the way.
Absolutely.
Okay. So let's break it down a little bit. It starts off with oranges and lemons, say the bells of St. Clement's. So I guess this is one of the reasons that I thought it was nonsense, because citrus, you don't necessarily associate with London, unless it's like orange marmalade or something. Yeah. But I don't think of that growing citrus.
No.
So this places us then at the docks, where Mediterranean fruit would be brought to warehouses on the east side of London.
Yes.
And St. Clement's is there. Mm-hmm. It's near the docks.
That absolutely makes sense.
Yeah. There are 2 St. Clement's churches, and both claim to be the St. Clement's. Who wouldn't? If I was named St. Clement's, I would also claim it. Mm-hmm. But most historians point to St. Clement's Eastcheap. It's in the financial district near London Bridge.
Okay.
And I did learn that, you know, Cheapside or Eastcheap, I always thought that meant inexpensive. Mm-hmm. Saxon word meaning market. Just to clarify there. So it's like an old medieval market street. It probably even has Roman.
I am a word origins nerd, so I enjoy facts like that. Thank
you. For sure. It probably has Roman origins, but for sure it was a medieval thoroughfare. Saint Clement, he was the patron saint of sailors. Now, you and I have both have Catholic backgrounds. I don't know if you enjoy a gory saint story as much as I do.
They do tend to have some gore. Yes.
So St. Clement was a bishop of Rome. He was martyred by being thrown into the sea with an anchor around his neck. Wah, wah. Bad look for St. Clement, but it did make him the patron saint of sailors. Huh? Although, if I was a sailor, I probably would not want to pray to someone who went down.
Yeah, yeah, that would be problematic at best.
Well, we don't know exactly when the church was built, but we know it was prior to 1667 because it's named as one of those that perished in the Great Fire. And this was another little interesting road. I know that we'll talk about the Great Fire over the course of our time here. But I was shocked to learn how many churches were burned in the Great Fire, now of 1666-67. I didn't even know how many churches there would have been at that time. I'm like, could there have been 30 churches? Could there have been 50 churches, like in the whole city? I'm here to tell you that 87 churches were destroyed in the Great Fire of London. 87. Like, if there's that many churches, how many houses were destroyed? And it really gave me a picture of how vast that was.
Yes. And I know it took a huge toll on the business community. So that's making sense.
Oh, yeah. But it was rebuilt by Christopher Wren. When in doubt, if somebody says, who was the architect? I'd say Christopher Wren.
Yes.
And this is a fun fact. So, of course, he was compensated for his work, but the parishioners of St. Clement's liked his job so much that they gave him a gift. They gave him one-third of a hogshead of wine. Have you ever heard of a hog? I mean, does the word hogshead have any associations with you?
I mean, I know there's pubs.
Yeah,
well, the hogshead. That's a common name with pubs.
Sure, and even in Hogsmeade in Harry Potter, they go to the Hogshead Inn.
You know, right? And to be honest, I just always assumed it was maybe something to do, I don't know, as some sort of trophy or something. I guess I never really thought about it, surprisingly.
Well, it's actually a measurement from back in the day, equal to about 79 liters or 21 U.S. gallons. So 21 gallons of measurement, that's a hogshead. They gave him a third. So they gave him 7 gallons of wine.
So it'd be similar to, you know, like a keg or a pony keg. Yeah. It's a larger measurement.
So, okay.
So yeah. He got quite a bit of booze.
Not bad, Mr. Wren. And nice look on you, parishioners.
Hopefully it was good wine.
Yeah. Go, parishioners. Though bombed in 1940, it was rebuilt and stands today. Now, a number of the churches we're going to be talking about have suffered both of those events, the Great Fire and the Blitz, which is fascinating. Before we move on our tour, I wanted to give a quick shout out to the other St. Clements. St. Clement Danes.
Just in case.
I know. Well, they do something special, too. St. Clement Danes, they actually have a bell tower that plays this tune, Oranges and Lemons, and you can hear it. They also, for over 100 years, every spring, every April, they have a festival, and each child gets a piece of citrus fruit. So, you know what? It's just like...
That's adorable.
It's like everybody that has a drop of Irish blood celebrates St. Patrick's Day. And every St. Clement's gets to claim this song. So.
So you said that one was St. Clement's Danes. Is it related to, like, the Danish invaders?
I'm going to guess that that's true. Okay. I really didn't look beyond that. But it's still a thriving community. So worshippers there. We're moving on. You owe me 5 farthings, say the bells of St. Martin's. Now, there is a famous St. Martin, St. Martin's of the Fields, where I've been to concerts there, wonderful music concerts. But we're going to another St. Martin's, St. Martin Orgar. It's just a block or two away from St. Clement's and is not there anymore. It was a medieval church, probably from around the 12th century, fully destroyed, except for the bell tower and the fire. And I was wondering about farthings, 5 farthings. I'm like, you owe me 5 farthings. I wonder, how much does this person owe this other person? I learned that a farthing is a quarter of a penny. So 5 farthings, you know, they could have made the rhyme, you know, you owe me 1 1/4 farthings. But that doesn't really sound as nice as you owe me 5 farthings. It hits the rhyme scheme a little bit better.
Yes.
So, 2 farthings make a halfpenny, 4 farthings make a penny, and so on. I also, down that deep dive, I learned, like, you know right now that there's 100 pence in a pound, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Back then, a pound was made out of 240 pennies or 20 shillings.
Okay.
Seems rather random that there would be 240
yeah.
pennies in a pound. But even weirder that there were 960 farthings in 1 pound. Like that 1 pound could be broken down to that degree. I just thought was interesting.
Yeah, I knew the money used to be more complicated, at least through my lens, than it is. I know.
When you get into guineas and shillings, yeah. all that. Yeah. Well, so we're in the banking district. You know, we're right there. Mm-hmm. All of that is right near each other between the city and the east side there, that banking district. And the banks didn't just, you know, arise there by chance. Because in the 13th century, this little plot of land was granted by King Edward I to goldsmiths. And goldsmiths often were also moneylenders, and certainly moneylenders came nearby. Moneylenders, as we know, lent money to the poor at very high interest rates, and usually just ensured the cycle of poverty would continue.
Well, and it would make sense that there would be several located in this area of the city. They had plenty of people to prey upon and
such. And so now this innocent tune becomes a story about borrowing money. You owe me 5 farthings, say the bells of St. Martin's. When will you pay me? Say the bells at Old Bailey. Now, this is the first place that is not a church. Mm-hmm. Old Bailey is the criminal court.
Yes.
Still is.
Now, before we move to Old Bailey, really quickly, I just had a question because you said the first two churches are just about a block apart. Was that right? Mm-hmm. So are they both Catholic churches? Are they Episcopalian, Church of England? I'm curious because I know there's several denominations that use saint names and things like that, but I wasn't sure with being so close. I guess I was just curious.
Yeah, I don't know for certain. I don't, and I think sometimes there were different, maybe ethnicities that
that's true. Around
churches. I know that happens in the U.S. a lot,
especially in the cities.
As you say, though, it could be different denominations. I don't know for certain what they are, or are now.
Just curious.
Yeah. So Old Bailey, it's moved slightly over the years. But when this rhyme was made, it was connected to the famous, maybe I should say infamous, Newgate Jail.
Okay.
So Old Bailey and the jail. Neither of those places had a bell, though. But St. Sepulchre's without Newgate across the street did have a bell. And that's the bell we're talking about here. The bells at Old Bailey. It didn't say bells of Old Bailey. So it's the bells at Old Bailey. And the bells at St. Sepulchre's, they rang out all the neighborhood news, the weddings, the christenings, and all that sort of thing. But being so close to both the court and the jail, they were also responsible for ringing out the executions.
Ooh.
Now, there was a special bell.
The song is darker than it even seems.
Come on, here we go. They had one special bell called the tenor bell, like the voice a tenor. Mm-hmm. It rang on execution mornings for 4 hours, from 6 to 10 a.m. in the morning.
Just nonstop?
Just nonstop. This is going down.
That is so ominous. Could you imagine?
I know. It's starting at 6 o'clock.
You're
it's
having like, your morning go. Tea.
I know.
Possibly a crumpet. And for 4 hours. And I'm assuming if it's a tenor, it's, you know, it's a lower.
You would think that it's probably somber. That's how I'm picturing just a clanging, not like a chime, like ding, dong, ding. It's more like the.
I mean, can you imagine going about your morning work?
Yeah.
Whatever that is. Or,
right.
That's,
right?
Wow.
It would really bring it to the street.
That
right?
is
the
intense.
News on, yeah, for sure. They also.
Because I was going to ask you, how would you be able to tell all these bells apart? Well, that explains it right there.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be really interesting to hear it. There's also another bell at St. Sepulchre's. It's a handbell called the Executioner's Bell. We're going to get to that in a little bit, but I wanted to say it now because it still exists in this church. It's in a glass case in St. Sepulchre's without Newgate. Oh, that word without, if you ever see that in churches around town, if the word without isn't, that means it was just outside of the ancient city wall.
Oh.
So If you ever see that in addresses.
Going like, back like to Londinium.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's what I think it is. Yeah. So we've been to St. Clement's. We've been to St. Martin's. We've been to the Old Bailey. Halfway through our locations. And we're going to say, the last question was, when will you pay me? When I grow rich, say the bells at Shoreditch. Now, the bells at Shoreditch are at St. Leonard's Church, though it's still referred to as the Shoreditch Church by most people.
Hmm.
Shoreditch.
Because of the song?
That's what I think. Or maybe it preceded the song. Okay. Maybe it's just always been called the Shoreditch, you know. And I don't know if you're getting parched like me halfway through our journey. I thought we see that pub over there across the street.
Yes.
Can we go have a seat over here? And I want to tell you a story.
Okay.
So now we know Shoreditch as kind of a hip neighborhood. It's in the borough of Hackney.
Yeah.
But it hasn't always been so. And I started to wonder about just that name, Shoreditch. I'm like, mm-hmm. What shore? It's not near the Thames. Is it? Was there an ancient river? I just started to wonder about that. And oh, I went down a rabbit hole. And it's a true story, and I'd like to share it with you now. Put our order in. Let's get a little something, a little peckish.
Sit back on the stool. I'm exceptionally curious about this because I've been to Shoreditch. So I'm, yes.
All right. Well, there might be many reasons that the name of this place is Shoreditch, but here at yesterday's London Times, we believe that the most dramatic explanation is probably the true one, right?
Yes.
Okay.
100%.
So, and the other day you and I were talking, we were having a conversation in your car, mm-hmm. and we were saying, we honestly are not going out and saying, help me find feisty women, help me find confident women. They're falling into our laps through in this podcast. They just keep showing up when we're just minding our own business.
And they're fabulous.
And that's what happened here.
Oh, so excited. Yes. Bring her on.
Okay. Apparently, London and the world is just full of these women whose stories are waiting to be told.
We have always been here and we're just coming out everywhere and I'm here for it.
This is a story about a woman named Jane Shore. Her birth name was Elizabeth Lambert, but she's known in history as Jane Shore, born in 1445 to a wealthy family. She was intelligent. She was beautiful. And as you can imagine, she had many suitors. Well, her father chose for her, of course. He chose a banker and a goldsmith named William Shore. Well, she did her duty and got married, but soon after her marriage, she requested an annulment. Now, this was not the norm at the time.
Oh, no. I'm surprised she was even able to be the one to do it.
Her reasoning was fascinating, too. She requested an annulment due to William Shore's impotence.
I love it.
A decree still exists. It says, she continued in her marriage to William Shore and cohabitated with him for the lawful time, but that he is so frigid and impotent that she, desirous of being a mother and having offspring, requested over and over again that the official of London to cite the said William before him to answer her. She was granted an annulment.
Wow. Well, you know, they did want us women to reproduce.
That's true. I mean, that's if she's going to have grounds,
yes.
you know, saying I want children.
Yes.
Almost immediately, she meets King Edward IV and becomes his mistress.
Oh. Well, that was an abrupt 180.
So much for wanting children.
Goodbye, impotent Mr. Shore. Hello.
Hello, Eddie.
Love it. Okay.
She would be.
Wasn't expecting that.
No. She's like, I want children. No, I don't.
I don't. I'm just going to. It's a good little gig. It's got some perks.
She remains with him until his death. Now, you've heard probably of Sir Thomas More, mm-hmm. also known as St. Thomas More. Mm-hmm. He wrote about everything, and certainly he wrote about this relationship and about her. He was, writer, political influencer, and later executed by Henry VIII and made a Catholic saint. This is how he described her. A proper wit had she, and could read well and write Mary and company, ready, quick of an answer, neither mute nor full of babble, sometimes taunting without displeasure. So we have her. She's quick-witted. She's amusing. Sounds like a perfect dinner guest, right? She's yes. just fascinating. I mean, if he's...
I'm ready to offer her a stool here at the pub with us.
If he's so saintly and she, mm-hmm. you know, this mistress is impressing her that way. She was also influential. More goes on. Where the king took displeasure, she would mitigate and appease his mind. Where men were out of favor, she would bring them in his grace. For many that highly offended, she obtained pardon. So she's this persuasive, mm-hmm. influential mistress. I think, you know, a true meeting of the minds yes. here.
Well, she's sort of England's version of like Madame de Pompadour, if you're familiar with her. Yes. It's
a mover and yeah. a shaker.
Yes, yes. And yeah, this is, I really, she might be worthy of an episode someday. Mm-hmm. I know we say that a lot, but she's fabulous.
So following Edward's death, Jane takes on other lovers, including two men that are both politically opposed to Edward's successor. And who is that but none other than old Richard III? Uh-oh. You know, Richard will go down in mm-hmm. history as paranoid, tyrannical, mm-hmm. murderous. Jane, be careful, because you're dating these two guys that are his opponents.
Mm-hmm.
Richard gets involved and looking at Jane. Why is she going back and forth to these men? Why is she? So he's positive that she is plotting to overthrow him mm-hmm. because that's what Richard does. So he accuses her of carrying messages, adding to conspiracy. And for good measure, mm-hmm. he throws in just the greatest hits of the decade. Sorcery and witchcraft.
I knew it was coming. I knew it. I was going to say, I'm putting down 20 on witchery here.
There we go.
There we go.
One of the things she has to do is a public penance. And I just like to picture her. Apparently, she's looking very meek and mild. And Sir Thomas More, again, describes her. Quote, "She went in countenance and pace demure, so womanly, went she so fair, so lovely, that her great shame won her the praise among those that were more amorous of her body than curious of her soul," end quote. So guys are lusting after her, even as she's trying to be demure.
She was hot.
She was hot.
She was sorry, and she was hot.
Even in public penance. It doesn't stop with this woman.
No, it really doesn't.
She gets thrown in Ludgate Prison. And so the conspiracy gets her thrown in and a marriage gets her out. Who proposes to her but the king's solicitor general? He's been told to find her guilty. And he's like, I think we can make a plea bargain here.
Scandalous.
Everyone loves her.
Yeah.
So she does. She marries him. She has a child with him. Her life from there on is described as somewhat bourgeois.
And she's obviously apparently somewhat young. I mean, she's still childbearing years.
Yes. And
she's lived a full life.
Oh my goodness. She not only has lived a full life, but there are, I found dozens of references to her in literature and music of the day, like madrigals and, Andrew Marvel. You were English major. Uh-huh. Yeah, had, he rhymed shore with, yep, with whore. She was quite the inspiration, though, for literature and music. And everything that I've told you is historic fact mm-hmm. so far. It's, you know, we have the historic record. But the rest of it might be legend, because it was said that when she was buried, people marked her grave, that she had so many people that stood for her that they marked it and they said, there's Shore's Ditch. Like, that's where she's buried. That would be Shore's Ditch right over there.
Oh.
And that's how the community got its name. That's one possible explanation.
Well, it works for me.
And as we said, it's, you know, a hip place now. Mm-hmm. In Tudor times, it was too. Before the Globe came around, mm-hmm. Shoreditch was the center of theater in England. It was, there were two big theaters, and those actors, when they worshipped, went to this church that we're talking about, the Shoreditch Church, St. Leonard's, and many of them are buried there, including Richard Burbage, who was the main actor of that time, the best-known actor of his generation. I hope this is true. One source said that his epitaph says, "Exit Burbage," which I think is really well played.
That is really well played.
I like to think of all these people arriving, these theater people with stars in their eyes, and maybe they've fallen on a little hard times, and someone's asking, "When will you pay me?" And they're like, "When I grow rich." Like, one of these days I'm going to make it. Maybe not. Let's keep going on our trip.
I had no idea that there was a theater background there. Yeah. Who knew?
Mm-hmm. We're hitting the road again. Mm-hmm. Hope you enjoyed our little stop off at the pub.
Absolutely.
We're going to Stepney with the phrase, we just had, "When I grow rich, say the bells of Shoreditch." "When will that be, say the bells of Stepney?" Stepney is in the borough of Tower Hamlets. And St. Dunstan's is a community of worshipers that is there now and has been on that same piece of land for over a millennium, since the year 952.
Wow.
I mean, anything, Jen, that's that old is going to produce some stories, right?
Absolutely.
So this church, St. Dunstan's, is not far from the Whitechapel Foundry, which I've heard of. I think I even saw a little bit of a documentary about it, a bell foundry. All the bells in this rhyme were probably made there, as was Big Ben's bells, and even the Liberty Bell was made there, America's Liberty Bell. I started to wonder who this St. Dunstan is. I mean, I did grow up Catholic and never ran into Dunstan, so I'm like, who is St. Dunstan? Okay, let's talk about separation of church and state here. He was the Bishop of London, but also Lord Mayor of Stepney. So, you know, no cloister for him. Mm-hmm. He's out and about with all the people. Mm-hmm. And I think it's fascinating that he actually worshipped at this church that was later named for him. I don't know how many, you know, how many saints that would be true of.
Yeah.
They were part of a community and was a minister, priest in this parish, and then later becomes a saint. I think that's fascinating. It was in 1029 that he was canonized, and a church was named after him later. Today, it's called St. Dunstan's and All Saints. And earlier, you know, I talked about St. Clement's, the first church, as being the patron of sailors. Mm-hmm. St. Dunstan's also is near the docks, and it has this association with the maritime trade. And they take in and count among their own sailors, yes, but also I never really thought about all that was involved in the maritime trade. Mm-hmm. I saw this huge list of what they consider to be their people: shipwrights, dock workers, rope makers, anchor maker, anchor smiths. Mm-hmm. Just went on and on with this list of all kinds of people involved in the maritime trade. There's a great photo. Maybe I can put it up on our website. Really old, rare photo of them decorating this church, like in the 1920s, and they're putting these huge fishing nets up all over. Just really beautiful.
Yeah.
And so often, you can imagine that these men are often out to sea, and their wives or mothers are waiting for them. So when will you pay me? When I grow rich, when will that be? They often had to wait 2 years for their men to return from these journeys. So I kind of think that kind of harkens back a little bit to that. Mm-hmm. And the sixth place that we mention is, "I do not know. When will that be? I do not know," says the Great Bell of Bow. This again could be two potential churches, but we're going to go with the one that most historians believe is the one, which is the famous St. Mary Le Bow Church in Cheapside. It's in the center of the square mile. Now, I know I've heard of St. Mary Le Bow for a certain reason. It's associated with the Cockney, if you've ever heard that story. Like, how can you tell a true Cockney in London? Oh, A true Cockney is born within the sounds of the Bow Bells. Mm-hmm. So back in the day, that would be about like 6 miles to the east, 5 to the north, 3 to the south, and 4 to the west. But every year, as the city builds, mm-hmm. that district becomes smaller and smaller mm-hmm. and smaller. So now it's a very small place where that gives birth to a true Cockney. I mm-hmm. think that's kind of interesting. But being near the city center, in the 14th century, this parish had a job, and it was to ring curfew for the city of London. So at 9 p.m., the official bells rang out saying London was closed for business. You know, last drink and go home.
It's no clubbing.
That's it. That's it. Closed for business as far as officials were concerned.
Yeah, official anyway. Business, yes.
Like some of the other churches we've heard about in this episode, St. Mary Le Bow was damaged by both the Great Fire and the Blitz. Mm-hmm. In that 1941 bombing, those famous bow bells were damaged, and they were silenced for over 20 years until they could be repaired in 1961. They rang out again.
But well, they had to be a joyous.
Can you imagine? Day.
Yes.
And it turns out they were even more famous than that, because there's a 1926 recording of those bells, and for years, in fact, some places, way out like a little island of the Pacific Ocean or whatnot, this BBC had an interval sign, and it's these ringing, clanging bells, and it's those bells from a 1926 recording.
Wow.
I listened to a few on the on YouTube. There's a few little shorts about, they're very scratchy, and I'm sure do not give it justice. But I thought that was interesting that people around the world would be hearing those.
Yes, things. Very much so.
And I think we have to get over to this church, the Bow Church, because I looked it up on the internet, and there's a cafe there now inside the medieval crypt.
Ooh.
It's called the Cafe Below, appropriately. I looked at the menu. It looks fantastic.
Is it like a coffee bar?
Yeah, but like, oh, the food sounded really good.
Yeah.
So if you're in that area, I think we got to visit them.
Very cool.
So that's where the childhood recording that I listened to ended.
Okay.
But we heard more to that song.
Yes.
Yeah, our tale of debt. So this whole thing has been about debt. Mm-hmm. When will you pay me? I don't know. When will that be? It ends with those lines, here comes a candle to light you to bed, and here comes a chopper to chop off your head. Chip, chop, chip, chop, the last man is dead. Now, that has significance too. Here comes a candle to light you to bed. Remember we talked about that handbell? Mm-hmm. At St. Sepulchre's. Well, at midnight, the Sunday before execution, executions took place at 9 o'clock Monday mornings. That mm-hmm. would be the time. So at midnight on Sunday before an execution, the St. Sepulchre church sexton would bring that handbell over to the prison, to Newgate Prison, stand there by candlelight and ring it 12 times, hoping for some sort of repentance on the part of the prisoner. And these words would be shared. Listen to this. All you that in the condemned hole do lie, prepare you, for tomorrow you shall die. Watch all and pray, the hour is drawing near that you before Almighty God will appear. Examine well yourselves, in time repent, that you not to eternal flames be sent. And when St. Sepulchre's bell tomorrow tolls, the Lord above have mercy on your souls.
Wow.
So it's one of those moments like, don't ask, you know, for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. And I just can only, I've just got goosebumps thinking about just midnight, the magic of midnight mm-hmm. and candlelight and bells and words and fear and defiance or who knows what other emotions might be going on.
So they were essentially seeking for the prisoner to have the redemption for their soul, not necessarily repentance for to escape punishment.
Correct. Okay. Correct. You know, just like get yourself right mm-hmm. because this is happening.
It's happening. It's coming.
And the final lines.
It's interesting that they wouldn't cede to, you know, intercede to try to stop it.
No. Mm. No. Just like prepare to meet your maker.
Yeah.
And here comes a chopper to chop off your head. Chip, chop, chip, chop. The last man is dead. So I find this really interesting, too. So Newgate Prison mm-hmm. or jail. They did not do the executions there. No. They did them at the Tyburn Tree Gallows. Tyburn Gallows, Tyburn Gate. That is all now where the Marble Arch is. So it's 3 miles away. They carted the accused or the, you know, the executee mm-hmm. 3 miles. And because of all that, those bells that have been tolling six in the morning, people would line it almost like a parade route. Mm-hmm. Sometimes some sources estimate that there might be 100,000 people in that 3 miles if it yeah. was a big case.
Well, it's so hard to imagine, but executions were social events.
It was. It was a big thing. Yes. You know, it started off Monday morning.
That wasn't just in London. It was a lot of places.
Yeah. So all these crowds. And so there you go. You're sent off 3 miles to the Tyburn Gallows. And so we have it here. We have oranges and lemons. It joins that subset of nursery rhymes that once you research them, they turn out to have a twisted or macabre mm-hmm. meaning to them. And after the break, Jen, we're going to talk about the influence of oranges and lemons in pop culture.
Ooh, I always love some pop culture. I'm here for it.
Okay, let's do it.
All right, sounds good. I'm loving this. I love that, you know, as I said, I wasn't all that familiar with the nursery rhyme, but I love hearing things like that. And I'll admit, as twisted as it is, the macabre nature is appealing. I mean, it's fun to listen to. And Jane Shore, I'm kind of obsessed with her right now.
Exactly. She's the new one.
Mm-hmm.
New part of our little pantheon of women that we're collecting along the way.
Absolutely. But I'm really excited to hear about the cultural impacts, and especially into pop culture. I'm really curious.
Oh, you may have a few surprises. There may be some things that you've even heard of.
Oh, bring it on.
Okay. But the first thing I want to talk about is just an overt musical piece. There's a contemporary composer, British composer named Benjamin Till. Mm-hmm. I was looking into his stuff today, and I'm fascinated by the things he's choosing to compose songs about.
Is it spelled T-I-L-L?
Correct.
Oh, that's a name in my family.
Oh, I might have even heard him on Listed Londoners with Robert Elm, now that I think about it. I know I've heard reference to him. And we have to watch it. I think it's available on YouTube. When marriage equality happened in, I think it was 2014 in Britain, he and his partner were married. And because he's a composer and his husband now is an actor singer, they made their wedding a musical and filmed it. So that's something I just learned like about an hour before we got together. I'm like, oh gosh, if I had time, I would go watch this thing. So
absolutely. That is fabulous.
So he also composed a piece based on oranges and lemons. He did this in honor of the 150th anniversary of Big Ben. So he was mm-hmm. thinking about bells and that there's bells all over the city. And it was performed in 2009 at St. Mary Le Bow Church, the final church mm-hmm. mentioned. But he composed it out of recordings of 300 different bells around the city. Oh. So he put it together. I got to find it to listen to.
Yeah.
It's just, I like sharing the world with people like that. And some of the topics of things that he's composed about are just fascinating. So Benjamin Till, add him to somebody that we have to look into.
Yes.
But I'd like to tell you a little bit about some of the references. You with your English background, maybe you've heard of some of these, like, say, 1984 by George Orwell. Mm. This is when I come clean, being an English major who has not read that book.
Oh.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, you know, it's one of those, I'm actually somewhat jealous because it's one of those books I wish was new to you. I still remember the first time I read it, and I've taught that book a number of times. In fact, outside of one of my classrooms, we had pictures. You had to choose a book, a picture of you holding a book outside of your door. And that was my book for several years.
I thought you had told me that. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't remember if it was that or Animal Farm. I'm glad it was
I've taught Animal Farm a lot. But it was 1984 was the book.
So Winston Smith, the way I read the reviews and the articles about it, like his childhood is symbolized by oranges and lemons, that there are lines of it throughout that book. And it's kind of symbolic and maybe even symbolic.
Reread.
Yeah. Symbolic of maybe his fate too. I don't know.
This would make sense.
Okay.
I don't want to spoil it because it's something that definitely needs to go in your queue.
Okay.
But yes, that completely makes sense.
Okay.
And knowing that the song applies, yes, absolutely.
And I didn't remember that it was the final two lines are mentioned several times in The Graveyard Book by Neil Gaiman, which I've read a few times. I couldn't remember that. I remember that really big, thick book. Liesl gave it to both of us called London.
Yes.
It's a novel.
It is Edward one of my favorites. Rutherford. Yes.
It's in there too. So it's referenced in that book.
You know, it must have been, since it wasn't something I was overly familiar with, that it just didn't really.
Well.
Or in the case of that's a novel, that was part of the fiction,
well,
you know.
It's funny that you say that. This week I've been listening to the nonfiction book called London, An Autobiography, which is one of my favorites by Peter Ackroyd. I could read that again and again and just get something different out of it.
And that one's new to me. I found a copy of that on eBay, thanks to you. So that's coming. That just came my way.
Well, what did I open up and read the other day? But just opened up to a page about oranges and lemons. There's this whole thing. So, you know, it's fascinating.
It's really just embedded, isn't it?
It's funny when you kind of lift those blinders, too, probably for any topic. All of a sudden, you feel like you see it all the time. Mm-hmm. It turns out that it is in the 1951 Christmas Carol with Alistair Sim. Mm-hmm. And I thought, like, I tracked down the clip. I'm like, why would they not have the bells doing Christmas songs? It's great. And then I thought, because it's all about money and money. Like, that's actually an interesting choice that the director made there.
Absolutely.
It's on the original Avengers show on the Christmas episode. Maybe you have seen where Emma Peel is singing this to avoid like a hypnosis, I believe, or some sort of mind meld. So yeah, she's singing
oranges and lemons. I haven't seen the Avengers. I know.
Well, I know that you've seen Doctor Who.
Oh, lots of times.
And there are probably three mentions in different episodes, especially with the Eighth Doctor.
Oh, that's a movie.
Okay, Charlotte Pollard.
Okay.
Does that sound familiar?
It was, the Eighth. Well, I mean, there's audio recordings and things with the Eighth Doctor, but the Eighth Doctor's reign as Doctor is essentially, it was a TV movie.
Okay. All right. So there's somebody named Charlotte Pollard that sings that. Mm-hmm. And it's also part of Being Human, that series. Now, in music, of course, there's reference. There's a Japanese band, kind of a folk duo called Oranges and Lemons. They look really good. It's a guy and a woman. There's an album by the band XTC called Oranges and Lemons.
Okay.
But I really have to hand it here to The Clash because they really reference this song. They have their song called Clash City Rockers, and I'd like to play a piece of it for you.
I'm here for it. Let's do it.
Bells of Prince Bonai, no one but you and I say.
You owe me a move, say the bells of St. Groove. Come on and show me, say the bells of old Bowie. When I am fitter, say the bells of Gary Glitter. And no one but you and I say the bells of Prince Farai. So we're thankful to The Clash for referencing our song. And the very last reference I have for you.
And it held up a little better than Gary Glitter.
Yeah, I know.
He's a bit problematic. He had a little bit of a problematic ending. Yeah.
So the last reference that I found is something called a St. Clement's.
Okay.
It's a cocktail. Yes. And it's gin.
Ooh.
And citrus.
Oh.
And so that's what I propose we do next is yes. go and have a St. Clement's in honor of this song.
Absolutely. What's the recipe? You do have to share with our listeners.
It has oranges and lemons in it.
So it's gin, like, oranges, and lemons?
I think you make a simple syrup.
Okay.
And we're going to do a variation on it. I've got it all planned.
Nice.
So anyway, fabulous. I hope you did enjoy learning about some of the London neighborhoods and the story behind a very old nursery rhyme. It just goes to show you that even something that sounds really trivial can be explored
yes.
and discovered.
Yes.
It turns out that London and I guess the whole world just becomes more interesting, you know, when we're curious.
Absolutely. Well, and I have to thank you. You brought in so many of my things tonight. You brought in The Clash. You brought in 1984. You brought in Doctor Who.
You're welcome.
And now a cocktail on Pride weekend. I'm as happy as can be.
We should have this cocktail, watch the gay wedding documentary, and maybe go down and celebrate at the drag show tonight. What do you say?
It's a deal. Let's do it.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us on
Yesterday's London Times. Thanks for listening and thinking along with us. We hope you enjoyed this segment of our journey.
Our music is from the album Astral Gate, used with permission of the artists Lucas Perny and Miroslav Kolar. Audio mixing by DJ Kensington.